WNYC Studios is brought to you by ZBiotics. Seize the day after a night of drinks with ZBiotics pre-alcohol probiotic drink. ZBiotics was invented by PhD scientists to break down the byproduct of alcohol, which is most responsible for making you feel crummy the next day. Drink ZBiotics before your first drink, drink responsibly, and you'll wake up refreshed and ready to take on the day. Try it for yourself at ZBiotics.com/WNYC and get 15% off your first order when you use WNYC at checkout. That's ZBiotics.com/WNYC and use the code WNYC at checkout for 15% off.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Do you get health benefits as a retired teacher or police officer or other government worker? Do you own any municipal bonds? A new study by the Manhattan Institute suggests that New York City and other localities around the state, plus the state itself and agencies like the MTA, may eventually be faced with a dire choice between two of its most solemn financial obligations: to make good on health benefits that retirees have been promised, or to make good on municipal and other bonds. In a few minutes, we'll talk to New York City Comptroller John Liu about this possible looming conflict. But first, Mary Williams Walsh, who reported this story yesterday for the New York Times. Hi, Mary. Welcome to WNYC.
Thank you. Good morning.
According to the study, how big is the unfunded health care promise to city retirees and others who worked in the public sector around New York State?
All over the state, it's a little bit more than $200 billion. That's not something you have to pay tomorrow, by the way. It's a value in today's dollars of what you're going to be paying in the future.
Over a period of, what, 10, 20 years to people who are currently retired and who will retire?
Yeah, over their remaining lifespans.
And what does that mean? Why is that $200 billion a problem?
It's a problem because normally governments don't ring up big expenses like that without identifying a way to pay for them, and that hasn't happened here. So it's just a huge amount of money that has to be produced over time that normally you would find a funding source for that.
And this is not the pension funds themselves, we should emphasize, which are accounted for through disclosures and estimates many years in advance, so the money gets set aside for actual pensions. This is just about health benefits. But why would the obligations to retirees and the money set aside for their health benefits be so out of whack?
There isn't any funding for retiree health. With a pension fund, you set up a big trust fund and keep putting money in it every year, and you hope that you get investment income from that. That doesn't happen with health care, and it's partly, I think, a matter of the way tax law works, and it's also partly a matter of just governments do it as pay as you go.
Where does the threat to municipal bondholders come in, which is part of how this study was framed?
You don't want to get into a situation where bondholders start to have doubts about, are you really going to be able to come through with my money or not? And with them, there is funding sources identified. You don't issue bonds without coming up with some way of paying down the bonds. But if they notice that there's a lot of other money going out the door, they might start to worry about their own credit.
I want to consider the source of this study for a minute. It comes from E.J. McMahon of the Manhattan Institute, who is a leading conservative voice on New York government spending in the best of times as well as in the worst. On the show recently, he called for the abolition of public sector unions in the state. So as that kind of an activist crunching these numbers, do you take these findings, including the potential threat to municipal bonds, at face value?
I actually think that the numbers are not his numbers. What he did basically was, you know, unearth them from all of these documents that governments are constantly putting out to the bond markets, and so they are the government's numbers. It just, the reason, I mean, we haven't been able to see this before because there's been a change in the accounting rules. Governments didn't have to disclose it before, now they're starting to, and so suddenly this big, huge number comes out of nowhere. But I think it's important to note that this isn't some projection that E.J. McMahon calculated himself, and it might be suspect for political reasons. It's coming from the governments themselves, and they really do have to do good projections. Otherwise, their disclosures to the bond markets would be wrong.
And what was groundbreaking here, I gather, is that McMahon did comb through many documents that are now being released kind of piecemeal under the new law to estimate the health care obligations, since they didn't and still don't have to be transparently disclosed in a very clear way, like health pension pension obligations, correct?
It's in footnotes, and so if you want to, I mean, if you know what you're looking for, you can go find it. It's actually new. This wasn't disclosed at all before, and there was just an accounting rule change in the last few years that's been phased in now. So now they are disclosing it, but they still put it in footnotes because that's what they're permitted to do if that's what they choose to do. So you have to sort of go looking for it, and it is labor-intensive and, you know, combing through many, many, many documents, and nobody had done that yet. I guess I want to make that clear because the numbers are coming from the governments themselves.
So looking at the unfunded obligations is one thing. Framing it as a threat to municipal bonds and wondering why people are still complacently buying municipal bonds is another. So I wonder if McMahon, who's been on the show many times and who we invited today for this, but he couldn't do it. But in your analysis, could he be trying to whip up trouble between bondholders and public sector employees to get the bondholders to be more aggressive, perhaps, in demanding public worker givebacks or to break their unions? I mean, Rush Limbaugh tells his listeners not to buy municipal bonds because it just encourages governments to get into more debt. Now, that's half satirical, I think. But is that partly where this interpretation, framing it in terms of municipal bonds, could be coming from?
I suppose so. I don't really want to put words into E.J. McMahon's mouth about what he's trying to do. What I'm trying to do is talk about, here's something that is going on, and I don't think it should be ignored. I mean, I'm not trying to prescribe, therefore, now we must break the unions, or we must do this, or we must do that. But if you ignore a situation like this, you will lose credibility with the bond markets, and you just don't want that to happen. You don't want them to stop loaning to you. Governments, they have to function. They need money to function. They need access to the bond markets. And so if people start to doubt the credibility of your pledges, that's something that you have to work on right away.
Why would health care for New York retirees or any public employee retirees be so expensive if all Americans over 65 get Medicare, which is a federal government obligation?
When you turn 65, if you're an employee or a retiree of the state or of New York City, you can join Medicare, and so some of your cost goes there. But a lot of people who work for the state or who work for the cities of New York can retire much younger than that. So you have as much as a 10-year lag or a gap where it's the local body of government that you worked for that's paying for your health care, and that can just be really expensive.
And before we hear from New York City Comptroller John Liu on this, where are the rating agencies? They overrated the safety of the fancy pants mortgage-backed securities before that bubble burst. Are they being ostriches or willfully blind on government bonds?
I don't know. They have methodologies that they follow, and presumably that takes this into account. But the thing is, when it wasn't being disclosed, you really couldn't take it into account. I mean, I can't stress strongly enough, this is a new accounting rule that's making this number appear. And I don't know if the bond investors and the rating agencies knew all along that this big bill was out there somewhere and they just didn't know what the amount was or what. But it's sort of hard to take it into account when it's not being disclosed in the first place.
And Liu will say that this is a very long-term, if ever, risk that there's time to deal with. Does the study make it clear to you, or any other of your reporting make it clear to you, when push would come to shove, where the city or other public entities might have to decide whether to default on retiree health obligations or municipal bond obligations?
That's a really good question, and what is sort of disappointing is the accounting rule now puts out some information, but it does not put out the information that can answer that question because, I mean, right now we have this huge total, right? It's the total in today's dollars of everything that's going to come due in the future. But what it doesn't give us is, like, okay, next year how much is it going to be, and the year after that how much is it going to be? And that can vary from place to place, and so you can find out that information with a bond, like how much is going to have to be paid on that bond in which years. But you can't find that out for health care. And so if there's going to be a problem in 3 years, you don't know that. If there's going to be a problem in 15 years, you don't know that either. You just don't know because the information doesn't exist.
Mary Williams Walsh, who reported this story yesterday for the New York Times. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
A reaction to the bonds versus healthcare obligation study now from the New York City Comptroller, John Liu. We recorded this just before the show. Hi, Comptroller Liu. Welcome back to WNYC.
Good morning, as always, Brian.
Did you read the Manhattan Institute report about municipal bond obligations versus obligations to retired city workers' health benefits?
I have read reports about the report, the news reports about the report, and it raises an issue, once again, that has been a topic of concern and discussion for years now. It's an issue that we do have to take seriously, although there doesn't need to be any calling for or any crying fire in crowded theaters.
Do you accept the conclusion or the implication that the city may eventually face a stark choice between defaulting on its bonds or defaulting on promises to retired city workers?
Well, so here we go.
Go ahead.
It's probably premature to start screaming fire in a crowded theater. It is a problem. It is not the only problem or challenge that we face in our city's finances. We've got right now a three to four billion dollar deficit to close within the next several months until the new fiscal year. But the pension obligations and the other than pension employee benefit obligations are a concern. They've been a concern for years. There are talks of revising the methodology, but as it stands, the pension funding is complete on a gap basis.
And to be clear, again,
pay attention to the OPEBs.
To be clear, as we were earlier in the show, this is not about the pension obligations themselves, as I understand it. This is just about the health care obligations to retirees. Maybe there's
absolutely
no distinction, but that the pension itself is funded and that those figures have to be disclosed. These figures don't even have to be disclosed, so there was a transparency problem with respect to even knowing or communicating how big the shortfall would be in the out years. Is that right?
That is true. The pension line, first of all, you're right. You're talking about what has an acronym of OPEB, but it is not completely separate from the pensions because many of the underlying assumptions are consistent. They have to be consistent. We're not yet required to disclose or report these OPEB liabilities, although the mayor, to his credit, a few years ago began to recognize the growing liability. This report pegs it at $62 billion just for New York City. And it is an issue that we have to start facing as a city. But it is also an issue that faces states and municipalities across the country.
Do we need to do something specific to close that hole so we don't get to a point where the city has to choose between paying retiree health benefits or paying back its municipal bondholders?
We have to start figuring out how to account for it properly and start funding it, or at least understand the cost of the promises that the city gives out.
Do we need lower promises to future public workers or maybe even to the present ones compared to the current retirees?
Well, that is an important issue, Brian. That is an issue that speaks more to how we give compensation to public sector employees, whether it be in a combination of these kinds of benefits and pay or otherwise. And we should properly compare that to the private sector. How we budget for that and fund those promises, I believe, is a separate issue.
Not your job as controller. That's a
no,
policy.
No, I wouldn't say not my job. I'm an elected official in New York City. I don't try to pass the buck, but there are different issues. The issue of how we compensate our employees and the issue of how we account and fund those obligations.
If we had a conflict between paying municipal bondholders or paying retirees' health care benefits, which would come first, legally or ethically?
Here again, we're not in any kind of situation that is close to forcing us to have to make that kind of choice. I don't think we ever will, certainly not in the horizon. But look, you talked about my job, and my job is to ensure that the city's finances are in fact balanced, that that we have a balanced budget. And you talk about choosing between making our bond payments as opposed to our pension obligations. They're both important. As controller, my job is to reduce those costs as much as possible. In the case of our, in the case of our bond sales, where we are in the middle of a $28 billion capital plan to build schools and roads and our city's infrastructure, the mayor and the city council decide how much to borrow and what to spend that borrowing on. My job is to lower the costs for taxpayers as much as possible. And so you'll recall that just a few days ago, I was in London and Zurich talking about our New York City bonds and what great quality they have for investors all over the world. And by doing so, increasing overall demand for our bonds, thus allowing us to save the save money for taxpayers by reducing the cost of borrowing. So there are lots of ways that we, lots of approaches that we have to take. We have to think outside the box in every manner to reduce overall costs for our taxpayers so that we can confront these fiscal challenges that face us both in the next several months for the next fiscal year, as well as to maintain the long-term health of our city.
New York City Comptroller John Liu with us. It's been in the news that you're going to Ireland soon to try and sell New York City bonds. Does this study and the publicity that it's getting and the way it pits municipal bond debt obligations against retiree health benefit obligations, does this make your sales job harder?
No, actually, there are many comparisons that make New York City shine in terms of American debt issuance and the understanding of municipal bonds by international investors. As I started to talk about, we based on this marketing trip, we sold a record amount of bonds overseas, in particularly in Europe, $123 million of New York City Build America bonds that were snapped up by international investors, $63 million of which were from first-time investors in New York City bonds, both record numbers and both having an effect of reducing our borrowing cost and lowering costs for taxpayers. It's important that we understand New York City. In fact, one of the bond investors that I had an in-depth conversation with talked about how important it is to keep the amount of our debt service less than 10%. And in fact, compared to other municipalities, New York City has been relatively prudent. We have about a little more than $5.3 billion of debt service right now, as compared to our $66 billion spending plan, and that certainly is within what would be an acceptable a debt service, if you call it burden, by investors.
What percentage?
Our pension costs are fast rising, and that is an issue that we need to deal with in the near future.
It's interesting that you raised the debt obligation, and you've said several times that selling municipal bonds eases the burden on taxpayers. I think that it's a big issue today that governments at the city and state and federal level have more and more debt, and there's concern about the obligations that we're placing on our children for potential future tax hikes by borrowing more and more and more. So how do you think people should see New York City debt sales in that light?
Well, first of all, let me just clarify the point. By increasing investor demand, overall demand for our city's bonds, we lower the cost of borrowing and save taxpayers' money. Obviously, borrowing money is not in itself a way to save taxpayers' money. The borrowing the money, though, as I mentioned before, is part of a $28 billion capital plan that I believe is necessary for our infrastructure, for our roads, to build new schools. And that is a plan that has been put together through the budgeting process, negotiations that take place between the mayor and the city council. And that, I believe that plan is solid. On the other hand, it is my job as controller to lower the cost of borrowing as much as possible, and we've certainly done that by whetting the international appetite for New York City bonds.
Explain it. When you say that greater demand for New York City bonds reduces the burden on taxpayers, if there's greater demand for the bonds, doesn't that mean that the city is taking on more and more debt because it's loaning more and more money, in effect, or being loaned more and more money by these bond buyers?
Well, quite the contrary, Brian. Increasing demand does not increase the amount of debt that we would issue or the amount of money that we would borrow. The $28 billion capital plan is the plan regardless of how much demand there is. But if there is less demand, we wind up having to pay more to borrow that money.
Higher interest rates because there's less demand, is that why?
That's right. That's exactly right.
Uh-huh. Do you trust the source of this study, E.J. McMahon from the Manhattan Institute, who has said he wants to break public employee unions, said that on the show. He believes in less government borrowing in general. Is he a trustworthy source of these numbers? You have them independently?
Well, I wouldn't use the word trust or distrust, Brian. I think that this is an institute that does have credibility, as do other institutes, and I don't think everybody would automatically accept the assumptions and methodologies that this particular study uses. But nonetheless, whether the calculations are precise or not is not the issue. The issue is that there are obligations that the city is currently on the hook for, and we need to address those head on, although we are not the only state or city that needs to address these serious issues. On the other hand, there are factors that could change that I'm not sure have been reflected in this particular study. It's possible that there could be changes in the underlying assumption on the medical trend rate. I think that it would be hard to argue that national health care reform would not have any impact, any positive impact on those trend rates. So there are lots of factors that can be incorporated into calculating these liabilities.
The projections over time.
In the absence of the formal guidance that is needed to ensure that there's consistency across all cities and states, it's hard to do. But nonetheless, we have to start figuring out. And like I said earlier, to the mayor, to his credit, did start addressing some of these issues a few years ago.
Last thing. You've been criticized by some for planning this trip to Ireland at public expense, I presume, as part of your job, because some say it's really a campaign trip for your anticipated run for mayor in 2013 for the sake of Irish-American voters here in New York. What's your reaction to that?
Hey, was that a plug, Brian?
That was an analysis gleaned from many news organizations.
It's a trip that I actually have returned from Dublin and Belfast, and it was a great trip to assess what's going on the ground there. I do believe that there is potential. I'm not the first New York City official that has made that assessment, although I believe I'm the first to actually go and take a hard look and speak to political as well as business, labor, and community entities to really understand what's happening there and where the potential is. And there has been a great deal of turmoil in Europe and specifically in Ireland, but the turmoil actually creates some opportunities for potential investments.
So next you're going to go on bond-selling trips to Italy, Israel, Puerto Rico? That's a joke.
If you know of any opportunities, I would love to hear about them.
Thank you for joining us, New York City Comptroller John Liu.
Thank you, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. And check out our Brian Lehrer Show News and Politics quiz and see if you've been paying attention. This is our politics website. It's a freecountry.org. Right now we have a 10-question quiz about food stamps, including Mayor Bloomberg's proposal to ban food stamp purchases of sugary drinks. Our news and politics quiz. See if you've been paying attention at itsafreecountry.org.